Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Page 2, read, has a photo. Luke Berridge recently treated the Odessa Police Department to brownies, and the photo shows Luke wearing his mask and holding the brownies that he brought to the Odessa Police Department. Courtesy photo. Turning to page 3, some more photos. Construction zone. Unrolling more weed barrier, Pedro Rodriguez works alongside his co-workers Chris Natividad and Margarito Gonzalez as they hammer in stakes to keep the barrier in place at Nimitz Middle School. Nimitz is just one of over 40 schools that Extreme Interiors is working on over the summer in anticipation for the coming school year. A compact track loader dumps dirt into a trash can as the next section is being prepared for weed barrier and granite filling on the east side of Nimitz Middle School, Monday afternoon. Bringing over more bricks, Extreme Interiors employees, Miguel Martinez keeps the bricks coming as Rafael Hernandez and Mars Suaste hammer the bricks in place at Nimitz Middle School Monday afternoon. The bricks will be the floor for a new seating area for students at Nimitz to sit at outside of the school. Photos by Ben Powell, Odessa American. Man charged with kidnapping ex-girlfriend with firearm. OA News at OAOA.com. A woman detailed in an Odessa Police Department affidavit that her 35-year-old ex-boyfriend pointed a firearm at her head after he used the firearm to get the woman into his vehicle, fired the firearm outside the car window, and then attempted to go through her phone. Julian Gomez was charged with aggravated kidnapping, first-degree felony, evading arresting or detention with a vehicle, third-degree felony, and theft, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported kidnapping happened June 3rd near the area of 12th Street and Jackson Avenue, the OPD affidavit detailed. Maria Quinones reportedly told police while she was traveling south on Jackson Avenue, she noticed a vehicle driven by her ex-boyfriend, Gomez, pulled up next to her. Quinones stated Gomez was pointing a firearm at her and told her to pull over. Quinones stated she pulled over, the affidavit stated, and Gomez continued to point the firearm at her as he told her to enter his vehicle. Quinones reportedly detailed that once she was in Gomez's vehicle, he drove her to his residence in Midland. Quinones stated she convinced Gomez to take her back to her vehicle. She stated as they returned to Odessa that Gomez began to travel to South Odessa to Pawpaw Street. During that time, Gomez started to arguing and fight with Quinones about her phone, the affidavit stated. Quinones stated that Gomez pointed a firearm at her head as he told her to delete items off of her phone, and he also wanted access to her Google location. Quinones reportedly told police that she refused to give Gomez the phone, so he rolled down the front passenger window and then pointed the firearm back at her head and asked her for her phone again. Quinones stated, took the phone and threw it out the window. Gomez argued with Quinones about throwing her phone, and he took her back to her vehicle, the affidavit stated. Quinones stated Gomez asked to be at his place of employment at 4 p.m. so they could finish their conversation. Quinones stated she was able to locate her phone a couple of hours after she was dropped off. Quinones reportedly showed police that Gomez had been using text-free applications to use different phone numbers to text her. A warrant was issued for Gomez's arrest on June 16th, and he was booked into Ector County law enforcement after he was charged with evading arrest or detention with a vehicle, jail records show. Gomez has two bonds totaling $85,000, and he was still in custody as of Monday afternoon. Donation. Chick-fil-A set to donate 75 free meals for a year to Medical Center Health System. OANews@OAOA.com. The new Chick-fil-A, located at Fodry Road, announced Monday morning that it will donate 75 free meals for a year to Medical Center Health System. The 75 meals will reportedly be divided among employees in our COVID units, respiratory unit, housekeeping, and engineering. The campaign is part of Chick-fil-A's celebration of the new Fodry Road location. It's scheduled to open this week, the press release detailed. Chick-fil-A normally give 100 free meals for a year to the first 100 customers during a grand opening, but to promote social distancing and to thank healthcare workers, they are donating 75 of the free meals for a year to the hospital. The free meals were presented to the hospital outside of the admitting entrance at 2 p.m. Monday. Odessa Arts Virtual Art Gallery Ready for Public Viewing by Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. Back in April, Odessa Arts was preparing to exhibit the newest additions to the Community Art Gallery in City Hall. COVID-19 had other plans. However, the show is still able to go on this year in a virtual setting. All the images have since been imported into a virtual art gallery that is viewable by the public. Like with everybody else this year, we've had to figure out the best way to navigate the new normal during a global pandemic, Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Ham said. We had literally just emailed all the artists who we had accepted into the gallery in March, and we were starting to put them up in City Hall when the pandemic hit. It would not be safe to bring people into City Hall and then, of course, encourage people to come in and look at the artwork as well, Ham said. Luckily, we had just switched over to a new submissions site called Submittable, and they have a gallery view for applications, and that allows us to put it up virtually and see what great artists we have in the Permian Basin. According to Ham, there are about 60 pieces of art that are on display in the virtual gallery. The exhibition will last until April 2021. This year's would have run from April 2020 to April 21, Ham said. That's when that gallery will be on view. In the fall, we'll take submissions for next year's gallery. Each of the art pieces is available for purchase directly from the artist, and the public is encouraged to vote on their favorite piece as well. This will aid in determining which piece will be purchased by the City of Odessa to add to the permanent collection. Each community member can vote once, Ham said, and then the city council always chooses one piece from each exhibit to add to the collection. The voting will last until the end of the exhibit. According to Ham, aside from the obvious safety issue, there are two main benefits to having this year's exhibition through a virtual setting. The two that I think are that we normally would showcase one piece of art from each artist, but because it's virtual, we have room for more from each artist to put all three pieces up, Ham said. Also, people that are former Odessans and want to check up on what's going on in their town, they can access the virtual gallery from anywhere in the world. People can view the gallery at https colon forward slash ADFAC. Follow Michael Bauer on Twitter at OAMICHAELBA. Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Opinion. National View. The Speech Police at Princeton. The Point. The cancel culture targets a respected classics professor. When a Princeton classics professor wrote an article for the Quillette website taking issue with recent faculty demands over race, a storm of criticism descended. This was an opening for President Christopher Eisgruber and other university leaders to remind people that Princeton is a place where speech and debate are cherished. Instead, Princeton is demonstrating how a lack of leadership enables the cancel culture. The professor is Joshua Katz, and his offending piece was headlined, "A Declaration of Independence by a Princeton Professor." Mr. Katz took issue with the petition sent to President Eisgruber, signed by more than 350 faculty members. The faculty letter began with the statement, "Anti-blackness is foundational to America," and included demands ranging from an extra semester of sabbatical for faculty of color to removing the statue of John Witherspoon, a signer of the Declaration of Independence and former Princeton president who owned slaves. Mr. Katz's capital offense was his description of the university's Black Justice League as a local terrorist organization. This hyperbole has given critics an excuse to denounce Mr. Katz without addressing his argument. His own department accuses him of using language that has long been used to incite racial and specifically anti-black violence. In a statement to the Daily Princetonian, President Eisgruber piled on. "While free speech permits students and faculty to make arguments that are bold, provocative, or even offensive, we all have an obligation to exercise that right responsibly. Joshua Katz has failed to do so, and I object personally and strongly to his false description of a Princeton student group as a local terrorist organization." But Mr. Katz was not saying the Black Justice League is Al-Qaeda or the IRA. The rest of that sentence defined what he meant, calling it a group that made life miserable for the many, including the many black students, who did not agree with its members' demands. As for Mr. Eisgruber, in 2016, Princeton rejected demands to remove Woodrow Wilson's name from a Princeton residential college and its School of Public and International Affairs. Wilson's racism was not in doubt then or now. Mr. Eisgruber said Princeton had rightly concluded the best path to diversity is not by tearing down names from the past, but rather being more honest about our history. But this June, students again demanded that Wilson's name be purged. A week later, the board decided, on Mr. Eisgruber's recommendation, to excise the former U.S. president. Mr. Katz has tenure, but the cancel culture doesn't need to get him fired to succeed. it succeeds by making him an outcast in his own university and intimidating into silence others on campus who might agree. This is happening across America and is especially disappointing at Princeton. The university has welcomed more conservative and independent voices than some of its peers, and under President Eisgruber, it was one of only two Ivy League schools to sign the University of Chicago principles upholding free and open inquiry. It's a shame to see Mr. Eisgruber wilt under pressure now, when liberal values of speech and tolerance most need defending. The Wall Street Journal. Call off college football. If you are not a regular watcher of the Tennis Channel, it may surprise you to learn that the sport is back. Reruns of prehistoric Grand Slam finals have given way to live coverage of top professionals in exhibition tournaments that none of the players seem to treat as mere exhibitions. Did I say top professionals? A June team event in Charleston included this year's Australian Open winner, Sophia Kenin, and 2016 Olympic gold medalist Monica Puig. A recent All-Czech tournament in Prague was won by Petra Kvitova, a two-time Wimbledon champion. But the winner on the men's side is currently rated the 405th best player in the world. The Eastern European Championship in Belgrade had entrants who have not cracked the top 1,000. Still, it's heartening to learn that high-level tennis can be played under restrictions that protect health and safety. Generally, that has meant testing on arrival and doing without spectators, line judges, and ball boys and girls. Players use their own balls when serving and tap rackets at the net instead of hugging at game's end. Games are eerily quiet, but the sight of real-time competition soon puts that out of mind. Like golf, tennis seems adaptable to the demands of life during a pandemic. But college football? As tennis legend John McEnroe might say, you cannot be serious. The Ivy League acknowledged what would be obvious if many people had not redefined the term obvious to exclude anything related to the coronavirus. It canceled all fall sports, saying, "We simply do not believe we can create and maintain an environment for intercollegiate athletic competition that meets our requirements for safety and acceptable levels of risk, consistent with the policies that each of our schools is adopting as part of its reopening plans this fall." The Big Ten, a conference that has redefined the term 10, it has 14 members, is taking a halfway approach, akin to trying to cross an abyss in two jumps. Its schools will play only conference games, which the league says will give it the greatest flexibility to adjust its own operations throughout the season and make quick decisions in real time based on the most current evolving medical advice and the fluid nature of the pandemic. This explanation would be more credible if it were not paired with the claim that the health, safety, and wellness of our student athletes, coaches, game officials, and others associated with our sports programs and campuses remain our number one priority. No, that is not the Big Ten's number one priority. It is somewhere down the list, behind making money, satisfying fans and alumni, making money, upholding tradition, and, let's not forget, making money. If health were the top priority, the conference would simply abandon football this year. You can play the game without fans, but not without an enormous amount of close, extended physical interaction among dozens of players, not to mention the large number of coaches and support personnel in every major program. The people on the sidelines can wear masks and strive for social distance at least intermittently, but the guys in pads, the only time they'll be at risk is when they're breathing. It's not just games we're talking about. Football players spend a lot of time at practice, where they are known to come into periodic contact with each other during drills and scrimmages. Any COVID-19 germ that finds its way into a locker room will not lack for promising avenues. Canceling the season would acknowledge the dismal realities of life in a pandemic. It would concede that the only way to safeguard the well-being of all the people involved in football programs is to postpone play until we know more about the virus and how to stop its transmission. That approach would have other advantages. It would allow Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh to go an entire year without losing to Ohio State, something he has not experienced in his 5 seasons. It would spare the Hoosier State the pain of watching the Indiana University fail to win the conference title, which it has captured just twice since 1899. It would spare people in the heartland the irritating reminder that this iconic Midwestern association includes the State University of New Jersey. In addressing the pandemic, the conference has taken a small step. But this is the Big Ten. It needs to go big and go home. Stephen Chapman. Chapman writes for the Chicago Tribune as well as being a syndicated columnist. Find out more. Read Chapman's daily blog, www.chicagotribune.com/news/opinion/Chapman. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020, Obituaries and Death Notices. Obituaries. Maurice M. Brown. Odessa. Our loving, caring, generous, thoughtful father, Maurice M. Brown, age 99, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on July 16, 2020, at Focused Care of La Mesa Nursing Home. Maurice was born in Okmulgee, Oklahoma, on December 2, 1920. He graduated from Longview High School and attended Kilgore College and Texas A&M for 3 years. He married Addie P. Johnson on December 1, 1944, in Longview, Texas. He worked as a bookkeeper at his father's family laundry and dry cleaning business during summers from 1931 to 1942. He was a veteran of World War II and served in the Army Air Corps. He was awarded the American Theater Ribbon, Good Conduct Medal, and Victory Medal. He was involved in the PBMA, Permian Basin Motorcycle Association, in Odessa. Maurice is preceded in death by his wife, Addie, his son, Steve, parents, George and Mitzi Brown, brothers, George, Philip, Millar, Rob, and sister, Margaret. He is survived by his son, Mark, and his daughter, Suzanne, and grandsons, Alexander and Michael, niece, Sarah Brown of New Orleans. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m., Tuesday, July 21st, 2020, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel, with Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send his family condolences, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death Notices. Gregorio Prieto, Midland. Gregorio Prieto, 76, of Midland, died Sunday, July 19, 2020, in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. July 21st, 2020, at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial will follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Judy Diane Chiaris Chihon, Odessa. Judy Diane Chiaris Chihon, 67, of Odessa, died Thursday, July 16th, 2020, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020, the education section. Thomas Ramos, who began his educational journey at Midland College, grew up with family ties to coaching and teaching and always envisioned pursuing the same career. Now he is living out those aspirations and putting his degree to good use. Midland College has been my second home, Ramos said. I learned about MC from my parents when I was growing up. I attended Kids College as a child and worked for Kids College as a teacher. I have always stayed connected. Ramos graduated from Stanton High School in 2011 and started at MC that same year. He graduated with an Associate of Arts in General Studies in 2014 and then attended the University of Texas Permian Basin, where he graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology in 2018. Ramos says that his parents were influential in his path to college. My parents encouraged me to go to college and fixed it in my mind that continuing my education was important. For Ramos, attending college was a growing experience. College matured me, he said. I became a lot more resourceful and independent. It was important to know the faculty in my program major. They became the foundation for a professional network that helped me along the way. Ramos always thought of moving to Dallas or San Antonio once he graduated from college, but family and opportunity kept him here. He has now begun his career as a physical education teacher at De Zavala Elementary. I wanted to go straight into coaching, but I love what I'm doing, Ramos said. I love watching my students learn and begin to believe in their abilities. Pursuing a master's degree in a high school or college coaching position is still a future goal. In his spare time, Ramos volunteers to coach basketball at the YMCA and soccer for the Midland Soccer Association. MC Director of Athletics, Forrest Allen, got Ramos involved tracking statistics for volleyball and basketball games. Allen served as a mentor to him during his time at Midland College. I've known Thomas and his parents for over two decades, Allen said. Thomas has always been very respectful, honest young man with a tremendous work ethic. It's great to see him now as a college graduate and a professional educator. I know his entire family is very, very proud. Ramos said MC helped prepare him to further his education. MC is a great starting point for students. My time there created a foundation that set me on the path for success. His counsel to Midland and high school students considering college is to seek out information about college and scholarships. Get more involved in your community and the clubs in high school that can help you learn leadership skills. Ramos' advice to college students is simple. Don't be scared. Venture out and try new things. College is a challenge, but it's a good challenge. Don't give up on yourself. You have to keep going and roll with the good times and the bad times. Always keep the goal in mind and remember why you started. Here's a commentary from the Dallas Morning News. Parents need more information as coronavirus infections rise. Parents of school children are intensely discussing how to educate kids amid a pandemic, with conversations ranging from thoughtful suggestions to paranoid venting. As parents now face a decision about whether and when to send their kids back to school or to have them learn from home as long as possible, The missing piece is clear. Detailed information about school districts' long-term plans. We welcome Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins' decision this week to keep schools closed until September 8th, with any schooling taking place online. At the same time, a number of suburban districts announced the same schedule. Jenkins' actions and those of suburban superintendents cooled the frustration and fear among parents, gave educators a little more time to develop plans, and most importantly, are the right call for the health of Dallas residents as COVID-19 infections continue to spread. And on Friday, the Texas Education Agency changed its guidance for school districts, allowing online education through November and a hybrid model of in-person and at-home education for high schoolers. This is a welcome reversal of prior rigid guidance that required schools to offer fully online and fully in-person classes, with parents forced to choose. With this new flexibility, school district leaders must now develop a long-term path to returning to school. This should be a path that ensures children get an education at least as good as that offered before COVID-19, including those children who do not have internet access or who have special needs. A long-term plan to return to school will include some at-home learning, and that must be more robust than what most children experienced last semester. A long-term back-to-school plan should offer guidelines on when it is safe to return to class and in what way. It will also consider what health data leaders will follow to determine if the community infection level is low enough to open school buildings, and what level indicates it's safe to gather versus time to return to at-home learning. Also critical will be safety procedures upon return and how to ensure children follow them. Some North Texas school districts are communicating these types of details in ways that ease the worries of parents and teachers. Garland was one of the few Texas districts to smartly approve intersession calendars for the next 2 years. Early in July, it delivered a reopening plan to parents and teachers on how it would deal with interruptions due to COVID-19 that built in extra school weeks to provide remedial help for students throughout the year for those who have fallen way behind because of last year's closing and the usual summer slide. Other districts have offered basic information with few details, promising back-to-school plans in coming weeks. The situation with COVID-19 is constantly changing, and making precise plans is hardly possible. But thinking through various scenarios, identifying data sources and expert health advisors, and creating processes for discussing and making decisions is the basis for leadership in a crisis. Finally, parents need communication from their districts. Giving regular updates on the thinking and the planning is one way to help parents maintain balance in an unbalanced time. Schools are too valuable to keep them closed. By Cynthia M. Allen from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Lots of questions have been raised in the often contentious discussion over if, when, and how to reopen schools in the fall. But the question conspicuously absent from many of these debates is perhaps the most fundamental. What is the goal of public education? Schools are charged with instructing our children in academics, reading, writing, arithmetic, science, yes, but they also play an integral, if not always tangible, role in the physical, emotional, and moral development of children. Schools are where many children learn to play, to compromise, to follow directions, to win and lose graciously, to face adversity, to accept responsibility, and to become well-rounded individuals. They are profoundly important to many children's growth. As many have pointed out, schools also serve practical purposes in the lives of many children, providing meals for kids who need them, child and aftercare in single-parent households or those where both parents work, and a safe environment for at-risk youth. It's valid to question whether all these tasks should fall to schools, But here we are, and for a large number of children and parents in America, this is what schools are expected to do. It is why the notion of keeping millions of kids at home, isolated, perhaps with no adults present, sitting before glowing screens instead of among teachers and peers, in home environments not always conducive to learning, let alone safe, should be unthinkable. This is especially true knowing that the haphazard virtual learning of this past spring most deeply impacted low-income and minority students. As my progressive teacher friend recently said, just weeks ago, the national conversation was all about black lives. Now, none of my colleagues want to return to school. What about the education of black students? Shouldn't that matter too? This fact alone should compel us all to pursue a solution that ensures schools are open this fall. There are good reasons to believe that it is possible to do this safely. While the science continues to evolve, there are growing bodies of evidence that children are not only less severely impacted by the virus, but appear to spread it less readily to both adults and other children. While this research isn't conclusive, it does suggest that young kids in particular are less of a danger to adults than we once thought, and should provide some relief to teachers concerned about classrooms full of tiny vectors. Older students are a different matter, but while transmissibility appears to increase with age, so does responsibility and the ability to follow directions and abide by rules, like physical distancing. If masks are as effective as emerging evidence and experience suggests they are, strict mask policies for teachers, staff, and middle and high school age students should significantly reduce spread, even when compliance isn't perfect. The experiences of other countries will also be informative, since many nations reopened schools as early as May. While outbreaks are inevitable, schools, students, and parents, and their employers, need to be as flexible as possible, but always have an eye toward keeping the school doors open. There are numerous thoughtful blueprints for reopening schools that balance the unique needs of teachers, particularly those at higher risk, with the primary goal of meeting the holistic needs of students. School reopening may be messy, but its failure is far from inevitable. Indeed, it seems possible that this pandemic will give rise to greater support for public education, financially and otherwise. It is also possible that our society moves toward an environment where the family, be it nuclear, extended, or created, is the epicenter of learning and personal information. That wouldn't be such a bad thing. But for the here and now, our schools play a profound role in the lives of our youth. Keeping them closed should not be an option.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, July 19th, 2020. Scammers use dating apps to launder CARES money. By Heather Massey, Regional Director of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin. www.bbb.org 563-1880. The CARES Act, which was passed into law in late March, has been providing financial relief to consumers and businesses across the country. With money being moved into the economy, scammers are looking to profit at the expense of the everyday consumer. BBB has received reports of consumers being targeted over dating apps and roped into laundering the funds received from the CARES Act. It starts out like a typical romance scam. You find a great match, and after some chatting, they suggest you move the conversation off the app. Before long, your match begins asking for favors, such as receiving money for them and wiring it to another account. The scammer will always have a reason for asking you to help them this way. They may claim the money is going to help a sick relative, business reasons, or to support a charity. In reality, that money was stolen from individuals receiving their CARES funding. The stolen money gets funneled through scam victims in the United States to accounts overseas, making the victim a money mule, an accessory to money laundering. Although they are a victim, they could still face prosecution. If you use dating apps, use these tips to avoid becoming a money mule. Do your research. Since most romance scammers use stolen photos, use reverse image searching to see if pictures used on a profile are used anywhere else. You can also search names, email addresses, and phone numbers to see if their information adds up. Remember, scammers often pose as men and target women in their 50s and 60s. Ask specific questions. A scammer may stumble trying to remember details provided on their profile. Ask specific questions about what you see on their profile and monitor their responses. Be suspicious. If someone begins asking for money or your personal information, cut off contact. This is especially important if they request money be sent over wire transfer or prepaid debit cards. Even if they seem to have a good reason for asking, you should never send money to someone you've never met in person. For more on CARES and romance scams, visit us at bbb.org. Steward Healthcare announces Brown as president of Scenic Mountain Medical Center. Big Spring. Steward Healthcare announced Friday that Stacy Brown is the new president of Scenic Mountain Medical Center. Brown will oversee operations and leadership at Scenic Mountain Medical Center, which has served the Big Spring community for 35 years and continues to be the only full-service healthcare facility in Howard County. Brown will also maintain her current position as the president of Odessa Regional Medical Center, also a Steward family hospital. Her expanded role as the president of Scenic Mountain will facilitate synergies between the two sister, leading to greater success of both facilities and more integrated patient care, a news release said. Stacy's experience improving performance and outcomes in health systems spans decades, and I am confident she has the vision to lead Scenic Mountain Medical Center into the future, Dr. Sanjay Shetty, president of Steward's South Region, said in a news release. Her business acumen, leadership skills, and proven track record in the industry and at Steward make her an exceptional fit for the Big Spring community. Both RMC and Scenic Mountain have strong leadership teams that will make this possible, ORMC Director of Marketing and Community Relations Madison Tate said in an email. Steward has implemented a regional approach with key leadership positions at other hospitals and found that it has worked well. Our Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Saravanan, also oversees both our ORMC and SMMC, and we believe this has helped to create more synergies between our two sister hospitals and the communities they serve, Tate stated. Brown said in the release she is excited about expanding her leadership role. With my depth of experience in healthcare administration, I am confident I can contribute to Scenic Mountain Medical Center and their continued success. I will work in conjunction with the board of directors to carry out their vision for addressing the healthcare needs of the citizens of Big Spring and the surrounding areas. I look forward to building lasting relationships with the staff, the physicians, and the community at large as part of ensuring continued access to quality healthcare in Big Spring. A native of West Texas, Brown graduated from Permian High School and then Texas Tech University with a BBA in accounting. As a CPA who started in public accounting, her last 29 years of experience have been in healthcare, with 25 of those at ORMC. She has held administrative roles since 1994, including Chief Financial Officer, Chief Operating Officer, and served the last 10 years as Chief Executive Officer and President. The release said she has successfully recruited more than 30 physicians spanning primary care, general surgery, nephrology, orthopedics, hospitalists, OBGYN, pediatrics, maternal fetal medicine, and other healthcare talent to the Permian Basin. The release said Brown is most proud of her recent participation in the Dancing with the West Texas Stars fundraiser benefiting the Permian Basin Crisis Center, where she raised over $80,000 to support the Crisis Center's operations. Brown is married to her husband, Michael, and together they have 3 daughters and 2 sons, ranging from 15 to 26 years of age. Brown replaces Emma Craybill, who announced that she would be leaving her position to accept a new opportunity as CEO of Doctors Hospital of Laredo in Laredo.
Dr. Roach answers to readers' comments on American diets. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Saturday, July 18th, 2020, from the Odessa American. Dr. Roach writes, "A recent comment on supplements generated many comments from readers. Many wrote that American diets are not healthy and therefore vitamin supplements should be helpful. However, study after study has failed to show a benefit in supplementing with vitamins at preventing critical events, such as heart attack and death. When there are good data to guide recommendations, I use them. I continue to believe that, with the exception of vitamin D in people at risk for deficiency, vitamin supplementation in apparently healthy people is unlikely to have any significant benefits and is likely a waste of money." After 30 years, first love reappears in woman's life. Dear Abby, for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. Dear Abby, I have come into contact with my first and forever love again, after 30 years. We have had a few encounters throughout the years. When they happened, we fell right back into our comfort zone. We both have current relationships with others that are not satisfying. We both have had failed relationships as well. No relationship I have ever been in compares to the one I have with this man. He's successful and buries himself in his work. Even though he never says it, I know in my heart he has hidden feelings toward me as well. This man has held my heart my entire life. I never stopped loving him. Do I finally tell him how I feel and risk possibly losing him forever, or should I remain silent and enjoy the encounters we have when they happen? Once at all in Pennsylvania. Dear Once at all, I think you should finally let this man know how you feel about him. If you do it, it will either enable him to tell you how he feels the same as you do, or stop you from fantasizing about a relationship that will never happen. If he is satisfied with the status quo, it doesn't necessarily mean these encounters will end, but at least you will know them for what they are. Dear Abby, my mother has no faith in me, mostly because I have a disability. Even though it's not that bad, she still doesn't think I can do anything hard. Although I'm almost 40, she still tells me what to do and criticizes me in any way she can, including my parenting. I can't spend a day with her without wanting to come home and take a bat to the walls. I have a lot of anger inside, and I don't trust her because she tends to tell her friends or family things I would rather were kept private. What can I do about this? Irritated in Illinois. Dear Irritated, if this is any comfort, I receive letters with the same complaint as yours from readers who don't have disabilities. If your children are healthy and doing well, and your mother's criticisms are baseless, My advice is to tune your probably well-meaning but overbearing mother out. Because she discusses things you confide in her with others, quit telling her anything you don't want broadcast. It's easier than trying to muzzle her. You might also consider seeing your mother less often, which could save your walls and the wear and tear on the bat you're tempted to use after those encounters. Dear Abby, I would like to propose a new word for general use. It's wasband. Definition: male to whom I am no longer married. Reason: ex seems a pejorative term. I didn't want to add that burden to the baggage our kids may have picked up. I have used it since the mid-1990s. I began to think of a new term when I was in a social situation with my wasband, his wife, and mutual friends. I bumped into a colleague and wasn't quick enough to think of a polite term for my former husband, so I could only introduce him as the father of my children. I think wasband is a less awkward term. What do you think, Abby? Lover of language in Washington. Dear lover of language, I think it is clever. The term is listed in the Urban Dictionary, and because you started using it so early, shows you are one smart cookie.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Cancer and a moon in Leo. Happy birthday for Tuesday, July 21, 2020. Exciting and risk-taking. You will never have a dull life. This year, you succeed with your biting wit and with staying out of trouble. You have what is called the millionaire's aspect, and if you apply this to a solo project, you do brilliantly. If single, you flirt too much to get tied down this year, although it's enjoyable. If attached, you are adored unconditionally by your partner. Gemini can keep up with you. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. It's a wonderful day to explore which way your heart leans. A revelation about the meaning of true love for either a person or an important interest is realized. The remainder of your day will be very upbeat. Tonight, celebrate as only you know how. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 2 stars. Today creates a stir in your home. You will be working hard to comfort family members. Changes concerning your residence are likely. You are feeling somewhat moody and sensitive to others' feelings, including children's. Tonight, an early good night's sleep. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Today brings tremendous mental energy. New ideas abound. Short journeys will be refreshing. A neighbor is helpful and has knowledge to share. Ask questions and verify. Be patient if a piece of work has to be redone. Tonight, you learn much by casual reading. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. It may be necessary to revamp financial plans. It is important to verify claims and credentials impacting finances. A con artist or misinformed financial advisor could be lurking nearby. Keep the situation in check. Tonight, heed body language as well as voice inflection. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Adorn yourself today and assemble an especially wonderful costume. You will be highly visible, and social prospects are especially bright. Initiative is strong. You feel almost giddy with power. Much can be accomplished. Tonight, attitudes about long-term goals are changing. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Although you usually dislike being alone, today's trend finds you tending to withdraw for some solitary reflection. Avoid crowds and groups, even on social media. Ecological concerns might interest you after some surprising research. Tonight, an idea about your idealism is brewing. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 3 stars. Today can bring news from a lost love. Some confusion follows. Gather information before responding. Avoid making binding commitments right now, especially to serve on the board of clubs or organizations. Tonight, explore options and talk with friends before finalizing anything. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Today brings encouragement from others. You will be highly visible, so be cognizant of image and reputation. A time of redefining your status and career is due. A hunch or creative idea can help. Relieve stress with humor. Tonight, address one situation at a time. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. There are important meetings and travel. Honor your individuality while appreciating what you can learn from associates. A dinner of fine foreign cuisine followed by a foreign film can set the stage for a memorable time with one you would woo. Tonight, enjoy it. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. Cobwebs or confusion that has hovered for more than a decade is suddenly brushed away. Today brings new insights into others. There is sudden empathy with people you just did not understand before. A more grounded mood prevails. Tonight, relief and understanding. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Other people make plans that include you. Be as cooperative as possible. A legal or ethical issue might be open to debate. Visualize a pink bubble surrounding all concerned when discussions grow heated. Harmony will prevail. Tonight, an intimate one-on-one dinner date. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Prepare healthy, natural meals today. Quell the temptation to eat junk food with high calorie or high sodium content. Drink plenty of water to flush any impurities from your system. A deeper bond with one you find appealing will blossom. Tonight, attune to what you really want. Born today, writer Ernest Hemingway, 1899, musician Cat Stevens, 1948, actor Robin Williams, 1951.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.